This is Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matter. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Journalist Alex Frankel embarked on an undercover reporting project to find out how some of America's well-known companies win the hearts and minds of their retail and service employees. His book, Punching In, chronicles his two-year urban adventure through the world of commerce. Frankel applied for and was hired by half a dozen companies. He proudly wore the brown uniform of the UPS driver. He folded endless stacks of t-shirts at the Gap, brewed espressos for the hordes at Starbucks, and sold iPods at the Apple Store. In his book, Frankel takes readers on a personal journey into the land of frontline employees to discover why some workers are so eager to drink the corporate Kool-Aid and which companies know how to serve it up best. We'd like to welcome to the program Alex Frankel, who's author of the new book, Punching In, The Unauthorized Adventures of a Frontline Employee. That's kind of neat because everybody, whether the biggest to the smallest, has been a frontline employee at some point in their lives. Are these specifically personal stories about jobs and positions that you've held?
These were all jobs I had within the last couple of years, all in frontline workplaces.
So, Alex, what was your methodology for deciding what companies to apply to?
I created a list of companies that I thought would be interesting to work for, and this was generally taken from the business press, companies that were applauded for being great places to work, companies that were often taught in business schools as case studies, and places that I'd been a customer and that I could see were doing good things, both in customer service and to their employees. So I created a long list, and then I started to apply. I definitely didn't get all the jobs I applied for. I applied for about a dozen jobs and ended up with five. That was the process.
I'm just curious about the timetable of this whole thing. Give me an idea of the time span.
The first job I did was December 2003 at UPS. That was really the experience that drove me into wanting to work at other places. And then there was a bit of a lag. And then over about a year and a half period, I worked at the other four. And I'd worked from a couple of weeks till a couple of months at each place.
At any point, did the issue of writing this book come up at all?
It was an undercover reporting project. I knew the experience would be richer if I didn't tell anyone what I was doing. And in fact, that was certainly the case, just to keep it under my hat.
Well done. How did you alter your strategy depending upon the company you were going for? What kind of modifications did you have to make in the process?
That was interesting because I didn't think applying would be even an interesting part of this project at all, but it turned out it was. And my strategy often depended on the company's approach. Applications vary completely in different companies. And one of the biggest things I found out there were online questionnaires, which are bigger and bigger, especially in these retail environments. And a place like Whole Foods, for example, when I applied, they've changed it subsequently, but when I applied, you had to sit in front of your home computer and answer up to 200 questions that were looking at your personality.
Almost sounds like a Myers-Briggs assessment.
It's in the same sort of vein. And what they're doing is they've created a menu of traits that they're looking for in their applicant pool.
A profile almost.
Right. And then you sit there, answer these questions, which you really don't know what the right answer is. You can't game it, as I tried to. I later talked to the test makers and got to understand it better, but basically they've got 200 questions, varied approach. You don't know the right answer. You answer them in a way you think is right, and they can then take their algorithms and determine if you're a good fit.
But where you could, you attempted to derive or extract the cultural spin, the direction a company
right.
was
place
leaning.
Like the Apple Store, I'd done my reading. I knew they want to hire people who are passionate about the computers and iPods and various products that they sell. That wasn't difficult for me. I've had seven different PowerBooks and Apple computers. So I knew to talk about my interest in the computers and their programs and products. I did tailor my interview techniques and approaches based on what the company was looking for.
One of the places you attempted to work was the Container Store. Apparently, they were especially picky about who they hired, so much so that, sorry to say, you didn't make the cut. I know you're disappointed. How does the Container Store make sure it hires the right people for its culture?
That was a really interesting experience, and I was impressed that they didn't hire me. Basically, what they did with me was they had a paper application where you wrote down short answers and really got to share who you are. Then, if you make the cut, you get invited to a group interview, And they're highly selective in who they choose. They're really looking for people who are passionate about what they do as a company. And as a participant in this group interview, I could see that I wasn't as passionate as the people around me. And among the 10 of us, I would have probably hired one or two of them. The people that I would have hired came across as people who cared about the products. And this came through essentially an audition in that interview, so that you got to see people talking about the products live and in person and could identify, hey, would this person work in this environment? They often hire customers who already are passionate. So they're really discerning in who they hire.
Of all the places that you've worked, which one of these places did the best job of creating a corporate culture? And why do you think that?
The project was to go out and get a bunch of different jobs all within this frontline workplace environment. The two places that I worked that really did have the best culture were UPS and Starbucks. I also worked at places like Enterprise, Rent-A-Car, and Gap. But UPS, for example, the culture there was immediately palpable the day I walked in and was given a uniform to put on. Just by walking into the locker room and putting on the brown uniform, I felt like I had joined a culture. I had transformed from being the guy out on the street in citizen's clothing to something else. So that was immediately something I felt. And then it went beyond that. There was something that transferred between the employees that you felt like you were again part of this culture. It wasn't so much that the headquarters were sending out messages that you had to interpret. It was just a palpable feeling of being on a truck.
It was just the vibe of the place.
Exactly. Now, at Starbucks, on the other hand, the culture was really strong, and that was much more something that the headquarters had created, and you saw it in documentation and materials that you read on the job.
I'm curious, in both of those cases, primarily in the UPS case, do you find that the external marketing campaigns, which are primarily targeted at potential customers and existing customers, impact on the internal employees?
I think you're referring to the What Can Brown Do For You ad campaign, and that has been really strong. And people initially thought, well, that sounds odd. Why would you go forward with pumping up this notion and message about Brown? But I think definitely it did have internal ramifications in that it made the people who worked there prouder of what they were doing in some way. Also, it created a language that the outside world could refer to the company as Brown, and this very simple jargon was made popular.
What was the hardest job that you worked at?
Physically, the hardest job was UPS just because of the hours. I worked at the December rush a couple of years ago, and the biggest uptick in packages UPS delivers 22 million packages on its busiest day versus 13 to 15 million most days of the year. So that was physically extremely hard. But the hardest job in another way was working at the Gap, where the job wasn't very stimulating. So it made it really difficult to want to be there and to put in the work all day. At Gap, unlike other places I worked, there didn't feel like there was an overriding spirit or culture that you wanted to be a part of, and therefore it made it hard to get excited about the work every day.
Which company do you feel did the best job of training you, and what was it that they did that made them effective?
Each of the places I worked had a different approach to training. Some sent us off-site for in-depth training, like Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Other places, it was on the job, hard to learn, like Starbucks. I never felt like I could grasp the job completely because
there was always that pressure of being in front of the customer.
Exactly. But I thought Apple Store, which is a chain of about 200 stores now, did the best job of training because you had about 40 hours of training right off the bat. And this was mostly done through listening to podcasts right in the store. And the podcasts were varied. It was video, audio, sort of multimedia. You'd listen to people talking, you'd type things, answer questions, watch video, watch advertising related to Apple. And then you'd also take that training and go and shadow some of the other workers and watch how they did things you just learned about. All in all, that training seemed to me the best, where it wasn't a completely offsite experience where you were still interacting, but you had the time to really study your job. You weren't sequestered in some room, but a customer wasn't in need of your help every moment, like at Starbucks, for example.
Companies spend an awful lot of time and effort trying to get their employees to believe that they're part of something larger and to really buy into an overall vision. Based on what you've seen, how do you think that they can improve their efforts?
If a company has to broadcast a vision constantly, then it seemed to me in the cases I work that those companies are attracting often the wrong type of people, because if there is a basic vision, then the people who come to the company will understand that vision pretty quickly.
That vision would attract those type of people too.
Right. And then that brings in people, and then those people carry it forward. So it doesn't have to be this constant top-down creation and articulation of that vision. A place like Starbucks was interesting in that it has a pretty clear vision that as a customer, you can walk in and understand pretty much what they're about. But I found in the store where I worked, there still was a lot of what I thought of as top-down articulation of this message through all the materials. And to me, I was a bit cynical or skeptical because I kept seeing all this material telling me what to think instead of just trusting that I would.
And you thought it would have, at least in your particular case, played better if they had just sort of backed off that a little bit and trusted you to say, I get it. I'm there. I'm part of something big. It's a happening brand. It's a cool place to be.
Exactly. But then you also got to look at the big picture, and they've got 12,000 stores and they've grown. There's probably a new store opening every few days, if not more. So it's difficult to sit back and just trust that everybody will understand.
So their process is more or less built to scale quickly.
Exactly. This is a company that's relatively young, 10, 20 years old, and has exponentially grown. So in the initial days, I don't think they would have had to spend so much time articulating that message. Now they do.
You've kind of gone for more of the environmental, it's the vibe of the place kind of thing.
Right. UPS is 100 years old, and their message is pretty clear by now to them and their employees.
Many of the lessons that you talk about in the book occurred in retail positions or in retail environments. What lessons can be learned working in retail that can be applied to non-retail industries?
The thing I learned that I think can apply across the board is really this idea of matching the people you hire to what your global mission is as a company. And a lot of companies, if they don't really understand what their mission is, have trouble attracting the right people. And it's this sort of back and forth that they don't get quite right. But if a company can really understand who they are, and then they're able to attract people who really fit in, it's just a great match, because people who then end up there want to be there, and the company can then prosper.
So the three primary points we talked about, obviously the book goes beyond this, is hiring the right people. And a lot of that's driven by the culture that's presented. Another point would be trust where appropriate, trusting the employees to sort of get it. But it's also the importance of a clearly communicated mission.
One other point to throw in there is that in each of these places I worked, I found one person at least who was a real believer in what the company was doing and what the store was doing. And if you can have at least a couple of those people in each retail environment, then those people, although they may not be a manager, will have an inspiring effect.
They're true believers.
The true believers. Other people around them, like me, new hires, will really gravitate towards them and learn a lot.
The book is Punching In, The Unauthorized Adventures of a Frontline Employee, and the author is Alex Frankel. Alex, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's time for You've Been Spotted, where we interview random people who are attending a workshop or seminar at one of our five executive conference centers. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. And now here's Kevin Lee.
Today I'm visiting AMA's seminar, Making the Transition to Management, taught by Mark Peterson, and I'm asking participants to tell me what it was like punching into their first real job.
I worked for Nobody Beats the Wiz. It was a retail appliance store. My job was security, following trucks into the city, doing audits, but mostly just for security. There was no training program. There was no standard operating procedures. It was just do as he said. This is how we do it. Keep your mouth shut and do what I say. Nobody Beats the Wiz is no longer in business, so kind of tells you, but that's how it went. Right now I work for an oil company, and I purposely make sure I go out and buy my gas from that corporation, because you do have that feeling. The company I'm with now really takes care of you. They make you feel if you have anything you need, they get it for you. They train you. If you need training, they'll send you and get the training. You feel part of that. That's why you want to buy that product.
My first real full-time job was working for a Greek shipping company. But I found the fulfillment was with my coworkers in the family type atmosphere. I also was working with someone who was a great mentor. I've been at Christie's Auction House for the last 5 years. It's definitely a company that believes in their employees. The fact that they want to invest in me and I'm taking this transition to management class shows that they believe in what I do. And also as an employee, it makes me want to stay with them because I know they believe in me.
Hi, I'm Mark Peterson. I'm the course instructor for Making the Transition to Management. I started as a part of a pilot program working with General Mills, and I started my professional career as a manager at the age of 19. One of the things that stands out to me both in that experience and for this course that I'm teaching, Making the Transition to Management, was how difficult that can be to make the transition to being a manager and not one of my peers, not in that relationship. Moving into that was challenging because I was young, people were older than I was. I was trying to motivate, inspire, hold these people accountable, and work on my craft. And the sooner that I could get beyond the self-consciousness of that and really own the fact that I was a leader in that organization, the sooner that I began to really make quicker steps, and not being so conscious of myself, but being very conscious of the employees that I was charged to motivate.
As always, we'd love to get your feedback. So please drop us an email at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.